Good morning and welcome to the Project Joy radio show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
We had a bunch of assignments over the weekend and here they are.
All right.
On Friday, the 13th, I didn't know that, Nirvana is right here before our eyes, Zen Master Hatuni. What a tool for egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate that it has conned us into believing that we need to embark on a quest to leave here, literally and metaphorically, because what we're seeking cannot be found right where we are. And yet, we are told over and over again that this moment, this here now, is where nirvana is. If we don't experience it, it doesn't mean that enlightened bliss is not here, or that there's something wrong. It simply means we haven't learned how to see it yet. And so we practice. Mm-hmm. Today, practice dropping the conversation, nirvana, blowing out, so that you can be here for what is here. Record and listen.
Lovely.
For 14th. Mm-hmm. Saturday. In this 20th century, to stop rushing around, to sit quietly on the grass, to switch off the world and come back to the earth, to allow the eye to see a willow, a bush, a cloud, a leaf, is an unforgettable experience. This quote is as true, if not more so, in the 21st century. We've all experienced being enslaved by the relentlessness of a schedule or a to-do list, trapped in a conditioned whirlwind of doing, but seldom allowed to take a breath and appreciate the wonder of being alive. No wonder the ancient sages spent most of their time in deep forests and high mountaintops. It takes an immense silence to drown out the voices of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, to be still enough to hear the heartbeat of the universe. It takes the silence of total presence. Today, when you find yourself rushing around, stop and find a quiet place to sit. Have an unforgettable experience of being silently present to a leaf, a bush, a cloud, or a tree, according to them. October 15th, while working, while eating, while playing, walking, and while driving, always keep the question, what am I? This is a practical question to keep in awareness as we go about our daily lives, because attention is always either here or on ego. This Zen story clarifies the quote further. A samurai came to the temple of Zen Master Hakui. I want to know about heaven and hell, said the samurai. Do they really exist? He asked Hakui. Hakui looked at the soldier and asked, who are you? I am a samurai, announced the proud warrior. Ha, exclaimed Hakui. What makes you think you can understand such insightful things? You are merely a callous, brutish soldier. Go away and do not waste my time with your foolish questions, Hakuin said, waving his hand to drive away the samurai. The enraged samurai couldn't take Hakuin's insults. He drew his sword, readied for the kill, when Hakuin calmly retorted, this is hell. The soldier was taken aback. His face softened. Humbled by the wisdom of Hakuin, he put away his sword and bowed before the Zen master. And this is heaven, Hakuin stated just as calmly. Today, hold the question, what am I, in your awareness, and practice making the choice for heaven. Record and listen.
Practice making the choice for heaven.
Mm-hmm.
There we have mm-hmm. it, huh?
There we have it. All right, first caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini, it's Tracy.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Great practicing. And I'm calling with humility. That last week there was also a quote about, like, who am I? And so what I've been practicing with, it wasn't who am I. It was like if you're looking for anger, it's not there. So I've been playing with that when I look to see what's wrong, there's nothing there. And
uh-huh.
so in the, you know, through the weekend and with working with Heaven, it was, just that nothing wrong, nothing wrong place. And I'm seeing a lot.
Can you say a little more?
I can. So I have been calling in a bit around relationship, and the last time I called in, there, what really stood out for me is conscious responsibility and taking conscious responsibility for, you know, my beliefs. And this, you know, sounds so like, well, of course, but you know that.
Well, it always sounds like, well, of course, as soon as we see it.
Yeah.
So we want to give ourselves a little break there, because that's the whole deal. We're always speaking up on the next insight.
Yes. So I'm the relationship that I'm in. This person often is in a quote unquote funk and negativity and cynicism and basically just in self-hate. And what I'm taking conscious responsibility for is that, you know, the belief that there's something, quote, I can do about it, and, you know, the belief that this person, you know, just hang out with me and I see your goodness and everything's going to be okay. And
I assume you want to see your goodness too.
Exactly. Totally. I mean, I see it all. And what I'm, you know, in practicing with each day's assignment, you know, I'm seeing that there's the, you know, the like in Vicky Simon say, there's, you know, the heart that is just wanting to, like, kind of embrace all of it, and that, you know, he is in relationship with self-hate, and I am practicing like heck to disengage from my relationship with self-hate, and the self-hate that is, you know, part of my sheath, the sheath around my authenticity, that, you know, I was raised in an environment with a depressed parent. And so, you know, all my conditioning around, you know, that I've, you know, whatever, there's the stories that are around there. And it's at that place where I'm holding that, this is, you know, I know that there has been guidance that, you know, we can work with anything, and what do you want to choose? And I want to choose life, and it's become harder and harder for me to be in this energy without feeling worn out.
Well, let me ask you this, Tracy. Why do you think you need to?
Well, this is kind of where I am right now. And like bringing it up and, you know, kind of stating that, you know, this isn't, you know, this is not what I'm, you know, wanting or what I'm want to be choosing, you know, has just created this major spiral for him downward. And
if I may.
Yes.
There is so much egocentric conditioned belief that we can make the difference for someone else.
Yeah.
So if I, you know, I love you and I just want to wait on you hand and foot. You know, there's just no reason that you should ever get up and do anything for yourself, because I'm right here to wait on you. At what point have we both conspired to turn you into a cripple?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I so see that, and that's what I love about the recording and listening. It's really getting that no one can get anywhere. I mean, things can be said, you know, until they start getting it for themselves.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so it's hard for us. You know, there you are sitting in your chair, and I've trained you to sit there and ask me to get you a glass of water. And we could do that until one or both of us died.
Yeah.
But if I'm not there, sooner or later, you're going to get up and get your own glass of water.
Yeah.
So that idea that loving kindness, unconditional love means sacrificing oneself to enable another person to have an opportunity that we are not taking for ourselves. You with me? So
I'm so with you.
Yeah, so I know that we can all let go. We can wake up. We can choose the unconditional. We can end suffering. And I'm not going to do that because I'm going to stay here trying to convince you that it's something that you should do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So if the Buddha never did it, we would not all be having this conversation. And, of course, Ashwini and I were talking about this recently because that's so often a part of the story is, Jesus left his family, the Buddha left his family, and people will say, but how can you, right? And apparently the Buddha's response when his wife asked why he left her, couldn't he have done what he did and stayed with her? And his response was, it's possible, but I wasn't able to do it.
Yes, that rings so true. That's how I feel like I am in practice. Like maybe I could in some other, that's not what I should have, could have.
That's right. But right now I can't. And so the choice is, you've jumped in to save somebody from drowning who is fighting you every inch of the way. At a certain point, you realize, I either stay here and we both drown, or I swim off. And perhaps the person will decide to turn all of that flailing energy into forward motion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I know it's hard. I am not in any way minimizing the difficulty of the situation. Just hopefully encouraging a really consistent look at what is motivating me. Where are impulses coming from? Are they coming from life? Are they coming from ego?
Yes, and that's been so helpful. Yeah. I've been playing with it. Okay, what am I taking conscious responsibility for?
Yes,
and that's been really
revealing. Emphasis on conscious, right? Conscious first, responsibility second.
That's good. That's good. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Take care.
Thanks, Tracy. You know, Sherry, the thing that was dropping in for me around that, in that story around the Buddha, is how conditioned we are to believe that, you know, that egocentricity, first of all, that I can make the difference, and I can make a difference under impossible conditions for me, and that in the place of making the choice for me, which self-hate would really vilify us with, that is, I'm not going to save this person who doesn't want to be saved. I'm going to save myself because I'm in danger of drowning, that's a selfish thing to do.
Right.
You can't
opt
out of that situation. Part of the self-hate is how you are not worth saving.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
That you're not equally...
But that's hidden. Right?
That's right.
That's really hidden in that scenario. Yeah. Go ahead.
And so that is the choice that the Buddha demonstrated, which is every node of intelligence is completely adequate to save, to work on their salvation diligently. Mm-hmm. And life chooses, not me.
Mm-hmm.
So in that scenario, the life is calling for the person who is assisting the other person to save themselves. It's a choice for life, not a choice for self-hate when you say yes to that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and if we look at that specific example, the intelligence, that feeling of being, that awareness of being guided, was guiding the Buddha, not his wife.
Yeah.
So by him following that guidance, he was able to come back and offer her what she needed at that point in her life, which neither of them was capable of doing at that first juncture.
Yes. So he was not. He was able to save a whole bunch of people, including his wife. But from that perspective of why did you leave me, there is still that place of being also being saved when that person can actually has the practice to save you. Right now, that person doesn't have it. They have to go find it in order to be able to come back and actually help.
Yeah. It's a hard place, isn't it?
It's a hard place to go up against that level of self-hate, which says you're not worth saving also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and even to recognize it. When I'm busy, you know this very well, but one of the things that I've struggled with throughout my pursuit of this path is the wisdom that you can't want more for somebody than they want for themselves. And the wisdom in that, of course, is that it is such a trap to try to be helpful, to try to take care of. It's a trap. And my teacher would say things like, you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped. You can't stop someone who doesn't want to be stopped. It's not up to me to do anything except work out my own salvation diligently. And as you're pointing out, the very important piece of that is if I'm doing something other than working out my own salvation diligently, then I need to look at what belief is in place that this person is not worth saving.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's our next caller.
Okay.
You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Christine.
Hey,
hello,
Christine.
Hi. Wow. In that last conversation, what came up for me, or an example that came to mind for me, was my relationship with my mom and how it seems when she raised us that she said this too, that she wanted to always, and she was always our friend, her kid's friend. And so and now there's been this, over the years, this struggle of I don't necessarily want to be a friend, a struggle with being my mom's friend and being there for her. And there's a lot around, you know, she's my mom, almost like I owe her. I kind of need to, and in a way, help her or act in a way that she wants me to act as her friend, and et cetera. And there's been lately this, yeah.
Well, I just a little comment at that juncture. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting definition of friend that I, as in our friendship, I get to set the terms for how you will behave. That's an interesting orientation toward
friend. Yeah. My mom, you mean my mom says, you know, I want you to, I mean, she doesn't say this exactly, but she's acting like, okay, when I call, I want you to listen to what I'm complaining about, and I want you to do this, and then I want you to answer the phone all the time when I call, et cetera. You're saying, yeah.
That's an interesting definition of friend, because if you're my friend, and you're putting those kinds of demands on me, I think throughout, most of us can get to a place throughout our lives where we would say, you know, this is not a friendship that's working for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and so there has been in both my sister and I a kind of stepping back, and I noticed lately, which is really great, that it seems that maybe she's getting it, that what she has wanted from me, she's not getting.
Well,
if I may,
you just interrupt you, because mm-hmm. it seems that it speaks to what Tracy was talking about, but the relationship with your mom. You know, mm-hmm. what we all want is unconditional love. What mm-hmm. ego wants to do is define what that looks like.
Mm. Yeah.
So when ego puts on those demands, what we assume is that means I can't love unconditionally because I'm not doing what that person wants. And then we get all twisted up with what is unconditional love, right? But it's perfectly possible to say, Mom, I love you like crazy. I'm not going to be available to talk on the phone all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it mean I don't love you? No, it doesn't mean I don't love you. It means my life is such that I don't have the same kind of time to talk on the phone that you do. Now, when I'm in your stage of life, then I'll probably be having the same conversation with my kids. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But right now, so let's set up a time. Let's set up a time for us to talk. You know, and I can talk for this long. Let's make an appointment, and then we'll talk about whatever is going on for both of us. You probably won't get to talk, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And so it's all coming from love, but it's not all mm-hmm. tangled up in those conditioned, egocentric demands and requirements and assumptions and beliefs and crapola like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, so what I was going to say is that it seems that she has, like, reached out, and now she has a few other friends, and so she's kind of distanced herself in a way, you know, she's taking care of herself and not having to have me to take care of, to be one of her care people. She's reached out to other people.
Which is good. And that doesn't alter the unconditional love aspect of it that you are practicing with.
Yeah.
Right? Because, again, conditioning would like to step in and say, oh, problem solved. Mom has all these other people. I'm off the hook. But it hasn't resolved your issues with her, and it's not demonstrating, not that we're actually here to do this, but it's not giving her an experience of what's possible in an unconditionally loving relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would know that. I mean, I would know what that is just in each moment. I'm going to figure out right now. It's just...
That's right.
It's just unconditional love coming out of me when I'm interacting with her.
And everybody else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a really important part of it. I think your mom was kind of on the right track with this friend thing. Instead of all of these bizarre obligations that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate puts on various relationships. You know, if it's just you're practicing unconditional love with everyone, not a different set of rules for mom and a different one for dad and for brother and sister and for kids and for boss and... you know, it's not that. We're just practicing unconditional love.
Yeah.
Better, huh?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, all that other stuff gets very, too much. So.
It just keeps us out of unconditional love. That's the only thing it's there for. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you know, life will say, oh, pick up the phone and call mom.
Mm-hmm.
Mom will probably say, ooh, I'm on my way out with some friends. That's fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's
mm-hmm.
now unconditional love is guiding your life. And all of those things will fall into perfect place.
Yeah, and those things have happened.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It occurs
yeah,
to me,
absolutely.
I do that.
Yep.
I leave a message.
And it's perfect.
Yeah, and it's all fine, yeah.
Yep.
All right, then.
All
yeah.
right, good.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Christine. Sherry, we are making the choice between heaven and hell every single moment, just as you described, just as the assignment was pointing to, right?
Yes.
And one of those choices, especially in relationships, is the confusion between meeting a need and loving. They're not synonymous.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's such a place of suffering, isn't it? Because as soon as we slide off into the content, oh, my gosh, you know, that is just endless. That is lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of suffering. But if we bring it back to the simple path that is laid out for us, choose unconditional mm-hmm. love, turn to life.
Yeah. I think we have time to squeeze in one more caller, Sherry. So here we go.
All right.
Next
All
caller,
right.
you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
This is Tony from Athens.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Siri. It's Rennie. Well, I'm here because I haven't called in a while. And what I did, I had
no,
worked.
No, 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 Tony. No, no.
What?
Au contraire. You're here because you want to be here.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I like participating, and I want to.
That's right.
Hear,
That's right.
Thank you.
That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
And so what I did, I picked one of the quotes and then just said, okay, I'm going to do something with this quote. And I picked the one about observing, like observing a willow or a leaf.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
I went outside and I did just some really very mindful observing and drawing of some leaves and some acorns. And I used to do that almost daily, and it had just really slipped away, and it was just so enjoyable, like no agenda, no taking care of anybody or being responsible for
just
things.
Present.
It was just being present and just, mm-hmm. just me and this acorn, me and this leaf, and it restored joy. I noticed that some joy had been slipping away, and it just restored
yep.
joy.
And Tony, it's such a simple thing, and it's everything, isn't it? What
exactly.
you did is redirect attention from that endless in conditioned mind. You just simply turned attention away from that to be present to a very simple expression of life, and you're in joy.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yes. Yes,
and if I may connect something else up with what we were just talking about with Christine. So conditioning would say, well, that's great. You're sitting there with an acorn. All right? But you've got all these things you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption is that we have to approach those things in a way that is different from how you were with the acorn. And we don't.
Wow. Wow, that is huge.
It is huge. It is kind of everything. Because life is directing attention, if we will allow it, if we don't interfere, don't let ego interfere, life is attending to what's now. What's now? What's now? What's now? If we don't go up into conditioned mind to go into the future, imaginary past, worry, concern, solving problems, figuring out, if we don't do that, if we simply stay in that same attitude of mind as we are with the acorn, no problems.
Oh, my goodness.
Heaven.
That just...
Heaven.
Wow. You know, like it's like
there?
Just... Yes, I was like, because now I'm thinking, oh, I got to, oh, I need to draw every day and really observe. But it's like, now I'm going to go work on the computer. So how can I bring that presence to the female that I did to the acorn?
That's right. That's right. Just let life do your email.
Wow. And not get into the conversations about, oh, well, but, you know, all the conversations about what I'm doing.
That's right. That's it.
Bring
that's us.
Oh, my goodness. That's like revolutionary.
All right.
Thank you
Have
so
fun.
Much.
Have fun, Tony. Yes. Have fun, okay? Good.
I will try to do that. Thank you.
You will what? You will do that?
I will do that. I mean, that's my the rest of this day and the next day Yeah.
All right. I thought I heard a try in there, but I must have been hearing.
You did. Yeah, you did. But it's been erased.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Which brings us to the end of another marvelous show. Sherry, here is our assignment for today.
All right.
When you eventually see through the veils to how things really are, you will keep saying again and again, this is certainly not like we thought it was. I think we just saw that in that conversation. The Sufi mystics use the symbol of the veils to refer to anything that stands between a believer and the divine. Reason, knowledge, emotion, self, senses, desire, and will are said to be the seven veils we need to see through. Seeing through the veils, the ancient Sufis say, is facilitated not by the eyes, but the wisdom of the heart. And when the heart sees, it is claimed that the eyes are blinded. If we translate this into the language of our practice, we would say that attention on conditioned mind is the barrier to being present to presence. When we drop the conversation, when we redirect attention to awareness, we are here. And here is beyond anything conditioned mind can ever conjure. We too would have to say, like Rumi, this is certainly not like I thought it would be. Today, practice dropping the veil of conditioned mind and be open to how things really are. Record and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. Wow.
All right. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Treasure yourselves.
Bye-bye.